Blog Talk Radio.
We're all sick, tired, wasted.
How great of a risk is it that we're currently seeing to our religious liberty in this country?
Well, there is a great risk. It actually started in the 1940s with some of the appointees to the Supreme Court by Franklin Roosevelt. You often hear people say, and the media will get confused by what I say because they're not particularly bright as a group. You'll hear people say separation of church and state. Now, hold on now. No separation of church and state is not in the Declaration. It's not in the Constitution. It's in a letter that Jefferson wrote. I'm a big admirer of Jefferson. Jefferson was not at the Constitutional Convention. That's number one. Number two, what they meant by that is a theocracy.
Right.
We know what they meant. They told us what they meant. And if one of these Sunday show dress-up hosts would actually read a little bit of history, they would understand what this country was founded on. There's a reason why there's a free exercise clause in the First Amendment, and there's a reason why the other clause is in the First. The federal government is not supposed to establish a religion. What we have now, though, is the federal government as a religion.
Right.
Secularism has become a religion. And just as in Muslim countries they have these Sharia courts, to enforce Sharia law. Well, we have a Supreme Court that exists to enforce, apparently, secularism.
You know, I'm really happy to have this morning on the show, once again, not her first time joining us, National Coordinator of Code Pink Women for Peace, Ali McCracken. She's in Atlanta, which, you know, I'm also based in Atlanta, and she's here for a very, very important conference, the United Coalition to End Occupation of Israel in the Gaza Strip. And it's all about peace and war in the Middle East. And I was looking at some of the events that were going on, some of the speakers, and it was really wonderful. And, you know, Ali and Code Pink do wonderful work. I really don't understand why anybody who is a peace activist would not support the organization. We'll get into that a little bit later. But without further ado, let me bring in Ali McCracken. Good morning, Ali. How are you?
Good morning. Great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me.
oppression of the Palestinians in the occupied territories, but also inside of Israel. And it's being really framed as the global civil rights movement. It's been super powerful. There's been some incredible speakers. There's a lot of focus on the boycott movement, also boycott Israeli products until Israel complies with international law and ends the occupation of Palestine. And there's a lot of very advanced campaigns, and Coach Pink is working on several to talk about if you want to. And so it's been a really great weekend, both an amazing and dedicated act this year.
Yeah, you know, that's fantastic. And you raised some really, the whole thing is important, of course. And, you know, again, and I emphasize to everybody, you know, this is about peace and about human rights. So, you know, I'm really happy to have this morning on the show, once again, not her first time joining us, National Coordinator of Code Pink, Women for Peace, Ali McCracken. She's in Atlanta, which, you know, I'm also based in Atlanta, and she's here for a very, very important conference, the United Coalition to End Occupation of Israel in the Gaza Strip, and it's all about peace and the war in the Middle East. And I was looking at some of the events that were going on, some of the speakers, and it was really wonderful. And, you know, Ali and Code Pink do wonderful work. I really don't understand why anybody who is a peace activist would not support the organization. We'll get into that a little bit later. But without further ado, let me bring in Ali McCracken. Good morning, Ali. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me. I know it's early on a Sunday morning, but I know you're out there in the fight. And I appreciate you taking some time and joining us here at Coffee Party Radio, and I take liberty with my coffee. So thank you so much. I got to tell you, you know, we had a brief conversation last night about what's going on this weekend and some of the things that you're doing, and I'm excited. I'm sure you are excited by what's happening. And I want you to give a little background on why you're in Atlanta and what's going on.
National Annual Conference. The U.S. campaign is an umbrella coalition that has over 400 organization members who are all dedicated in one way or another to doing solidarity work with the Palestinian people who are in pursuit of liberty and self-determination and human rights. So Cooking's been doing work and solidarity with Palestinian people for a very long time. And we've been a really proud member of the U.S. campaign. So this weekend has been an incredible series of speakers and workshops. And the focus of the conference this year is pulling in members of the Black Lives Matter movement to connect the struggles between oppressed people of color here in the United States and the oppression of the Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territories, but also inside of Israel. And it's being really framed as a global civil rights movement. Incredible speakers. There's a lot of focus on the boycott movement, also boycott Israeli products until Israel complies with international law and ends the occupation of Palestine. There's a lot of very advanced campaigns, and Christine is working on several boycott campaigns that I'd be happy to talk about if you want to. And so it's been a really great weekend. It's also an amazing and dedicated activist here.
Yeah, you know, that's fantastic. And you raised some really the whole thing is important, of course. And, you know, again, and I emphasize to everybody, you know, this is about peace and about human rights. You know, that is the foundation of this entire movement. It's the foundation of Code Pink's work, as far as from what I see. Anyway, I don't think I'm wrong on that. You know, please correct me if I am. And one of the things I noticed is you were talking about some of the great speakers and great workshops. One of the things I noticed is that you guys were at a church on Friday evening, for example. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah, the opening event at the church South Africa, and since then, many churches and mosques and even synagogues have taken up this to be the anti-apartheid movement of our time. There is nothing atypical to one state, in my opinion, to fighting for human rights and self-determination, those things I mentioned before, for the Palestinian people who are under a brutal Israeli military occupation. So at the church on Friday, we had amazing speakers. There's a new executive director of the U.S. Champion for End Military Occupation. He's a wonderful guy, Yusuf Manaya. He's one of the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, Patrice Kumar.
Sure.
And a few other excellent speakers who all drew upon their experiences in previous civil rights movements, especially here in the U.S., but also in Palestine. We had some older women who spoke about what were in the United States. We still have racism, and we still have a structure of white supremacy, and that manifests itself in a lot of ways. But very directly linked, a lot of them, the United States police officers are actually trained in Israel, where there's also a structure of white supremacy, where if you're not a white Jewish person, then you don't have the same rights as everyone else. And so Palestinians are fighting for equal rights and their civil liberties in the same way that many people of color in the United States are fighting. So the church was an awesome event, and there was lots of great singing.
That's fantastic. And, you talk about something. We reported it. One of my colleagues actually wrote a lengthy investigative article about that issue, about the training of police departments by Israel. And, of course, you mentioned Black Lives Matter. We know from the standpoint of what's going on here inside our own country when it comes to the use of lethal force as a first option to an unarmed person, for example, which is one of my craziness is in my life, as far as, why are we doing that? I remember back in I think it was 93, when Rodney King got jumped by the police and was beat down by five police officers, we were having a discussion about police brutality at that level. Now we're arguing about killing. I would rather go back to, okay, can you just stop beating them? At least people wouldn't be dying. It's amazing how the conversation has escalated, and these trainings and the militarization on top of it of our police department, and how it ties together with regimes that are acting like that around the world. And I'm sure you've seen that many times.
At Code Pink, the reason that we've come to, among many others, is that, as we see the wars draw down in Iraq and Afghanistan, the troops come out. There's still lots of private security contractors there. There's all these war toys that are left over, and not only are left over, but the Department of Defense still has contracts to acquire. The weapons companies are still trying to make tons of money, so they've shifted their market toward the police in the United States. So the police have, there's a federal program, 1033,
right,
that gives police departments this leftover military equipment, and the weapons manufacturers are targeting them now. They're trying to militarize them more because they need a new market. It's really despicable. And then those same weapons manufacturers, in turn, are selling weapons to Israel. So it is about $3.1 billion every year. And Israel is the 24th wealthiest nation in the world. $3.1 billion is more than all the aid we give to every African country and every Caribbean country combined.
Right.
We give that to Israel, and they use it to buy weapons from us, and they use those weapons to oppress the Palestinians. So the connection is very clear.
I want to get into something controversial about this issue because, of course, being on the front lines of this issue, and you are on the front lines, what some of the controversies are that I like to address. Because one of the biggest discussions, I even have this just in my work culture, in my away from activism, away from journalism work, and even in journalism, is the accusation that because we have this stance, you and I personally and as organizations have this stance that the Israeli government is committing apartheid, that we are somehow anti-Semitic. And it drives me crazy, because I don't have a racist or bigoted bone in my body. And my first answer is, well, does that mean because I'm critical of the United States' part in different things, we don't even have to talk about the Middle East, that makes me un-American? Of course, some people would say yes, which is ridiculous. But so, you know, tell me about some of the struggle there and how you yourself and personally and how Code Pink deals with that discussion.
Well, I think you'll appreciate that I believe dissent is one of the highest forms of patriotism.
Right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with criticizing not only one own country in order to improve it, but any other country to improve the well-being of that country's citizens. Especially, you know, in the case of Israel, we're thinking, I mean, you and I personally pay over $20 every year directly to the Israeli military. Right. And so I think that I have a right, not only as a global citizen who cares about other human beings that are being oppressed, but as someone who is, unwillingly invested in this oppression, to speak out against it. I think it's a ridiculous way that the Israeli government has framed any sort of criticism, calling it anti-Semitism. I mean, when is criticizing a government, criticizing an entire people or an entire religion?
Right.
No one would say that about any other country. That just is not even a logical argument. But somehow they've managed, along with a lot of the organizations they have operating within the United States as PR agents for the Israeli government, like the Anti-Defamation League and APAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, and what they're doing is ultimately harming Israel. They're the ones who are acting against the best interests of Israel. As peace activists in solidarity with the Palestinian people, we want to see peace. And we believe that peace can only be achieved through a just and equitable solution for both Israelis and Palestinians. The Israelis are putting their hands over their ears and saying, la, 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 we can't hear you. That's anti-Semitic. And if they're harboring more, negative feelings towards the Israeli government, the more they bomb Gaza, the more they occupy and humiliate the Palestinians in the West Bank, is they're creating, that is what is creating, if anything, anti-Semitism. And there is a strong difference between being critical of the Israeli government and being anti-Semitic. We are strongly against anti-Semitism, but I also want to point out there are inherently Semitic people. So saying the phrase anti-Semitic
Right. Is
a bit confusing. So right. They would say we are obviously not anti-Jewish. Many of the organizations we work with are Jewish. They see this as their calling to support the country that's doing this in their name. Many members of Code Pink are Jewish. I think it's bogus to say that criticizing the government is anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. We're fighting for human rights. That is, I think, my understanding, a Jewish value is fighting for human rights. And I take inspiration from a lot of my Jewish friends on that end.
Well, yeah, no doubt. And, of course, as we deal with disinformation and discussions like this, facts do get in the way. Most of the time it helps what we're saying. And you lay out some, obviously it's absurd. 100% agree with that. It's my goal, too, is to continue to give anybody who is fighting for human rights another platform to discuss it. And I'm happy to do that with you guys. And it is important because, I had just last week, and as you know, you were one of the people who have been invited to speak at the Activist Online Training Conference. And we, the Solutions Institute, which I'm an advisor on, is a nonpartisan organization. And you weren't able to do the last one because of the wedding you went to. And so you were still being advertised, though, on some of the older stuff. So I appreciate that, but that's not where I'm going with that. So obviously there was a person, I was monitoring this conversation that was happening in the event room on Facebook, on social media, and the person was there and they were saying, so you're supporting Code Pink. Now, the conference isn't about that, and it isn't about being partisan or supportive of any particular issue. It's about training activists and organizations to be better at getting their message out and what they're fighting. That's the whole purpose, as you know. So, you know, I want to jump in there swinging, you know, and but I lay back and I watch. I lay back there and I watch, and I find it interesting. And this particular person is conservative, and you know, that's only relevant to this conversation, but it's conservative that we have worked with actually in the past, and that, you know, Dan Johnson, who's the president of Solutions Institute, jumped in and says, well, I know people from Code Pink, and they're very good activists, and I happen to support a number of the issues that they do, particularly about human rights. And, you know, why wouldn't anybody say that? And, you know, to listen to somebody come back and say, well, I can't buy a ticket because you're supporting Code, or I can't support Code Pink, and I'm, like, laughing. You know, and you know, it's like, really, that's why I continue to reach out to you guys and watch what you're doing and want to show what you're doing, is because it's ludicrous for me to have, and I see it a lot, and that anybody would have a problem, well, they're communists, or what are you talking about? You know, what? It's like, you know, they're left liberal. And shut up. How is it liberal? How is it anything to be supportive of human rights equally in the world? Talk a little bit about that. I know. I know.
Infrastructure, other things that can build up our country and make them great. And if someone disagrees with that mission statement, then I don't know what.
Right.
I don't know what that says about them. But even if that guy, you know, disagrees with maybe our tactics, which are sometimes considered controversial, and they're not for everyone, what he can't deny is the fact that we are effective. And that point of ACTCON is to learn how to be effective in different ways. To us at Code Pink, movements and strategies aren't just about protesting, and it's not just about passing bills. It's about doing those things together, plus 10 other things at the same time.
Right.
It's about working from the inside to the outside, and the top down and the bottom up. I'm more prone to saying bottom up. I'm not a huge favor of top down, but if you want to be effective, then that's what it requires. And the best example is the Iran nuclear deal, which just got passed.
Mm-hmm.
We were working with people inside of Congress. We were even working with the administration, which is something not only have we never done, we thought we'd never do.
Right.
It was effective, and it was a real struggle that was in jeopardy by the right wing and some Democrats who pulled out. But I think that this guy's obviously missing the point. You know?
Right.
And maybe it's probably a good thing that he doesn't attend the Congress.
Probably missed a couple more points as well. I absolutely, you know, the Iran nuclear deal. Let's talk a little bit about that. The, you know, again, a complete amount of disinformation. Now, I personally had a discussion, and I do this on controversial things a lot. I actually sit down and I actually read what we're talking about, which a lot more people should do. You know, and as I was telling people, I said it's only 159 pages. It's nothing. It's a small book. You know, just read it. Because, you know, I had a discussion. You know, I had a discussion with somebody in Georgia, and that I consider at least a good acquaintance. I actually work with the gentleman. We volunteer at my son's high school together, and we work together on doing videography and programming and things like that. And he asked me out of the blue, "So, what do you think of the Iran nuclear deal?" And I don't talk a lot of, you know, like a lot of people, we don't talk a lot of politics with our friends per se, especially ones that we're not sure where they're coming from. And I decided to answer because I have a very strong opinion about it, and I shouldn't have. but I did was, and it was interesting because he did not read it. He was completely listening to the words of other people, and he actually said, you know, we have some very interesting congressional people here in this state. We're a warmonger. We are represented in Georgia by warmongers. There's no doubt. You know, I call him out on it all the time. And he was throwing out some names because he knows some of these people. Loudermilk is one that he said. Well, he told me that it says that this, this, and this. I said, no, it doesn't say that. I said, but don't listen to me. You know, don't listen to me. Go read it. I'm telling you it doesn't say it. You're telling me that somebody told you you say it. So why don't you prove which one is right by going and reading it? You know, I know. It's just, it's, I know. I do it all the time. I get in trouble with it. I just don't understand. But it is amazing to me. You know, like you mentioned, you know, the Republicans, here we had a situation where it was party line stuff. I got to thinking about our discussion today and wondering what would have happened if this would have been reversed. Of course, I know Bush wouldn't have ever done it just by his tactics and the way his administration operated. But just looking hypothetically, how party line-ish we are when it comes to the war issues. You know, in some regard, you know, like you mentioned, the Democrats bailed, you know, betrayed the party line. And I don't particularly, and I know this is the case with you guys, you're about the issues. You know, I don't trust the majority of the Democratic Party either on anything, let alone warmongering, because if they were so peaceful, they would be screaming as loud as you guys are. Wouldn't you agree with that?
We feel the same way.
Yeah.
Mm.
Interesting. She's actually pretty consistent when it comes to this issue. And you know, I come from ideologically. You know, I was raised in New York City, and you know, I'm a little bit older than you are, and you know, I came right behind. You know, I was a teenager right behind the anti-war movement. You know, the Vietnam War. And the distrust of the government and the police state. And I find that from the standpoint of ideology today, that what is considered liberal and progressive is not what I grew up around. So I'm lost when it comes to those allegiances, I guess. You know, I find things a little bit too statist for my taste, or too capitulating, I guess. I guess that's the way people capitulating to the government. It's almost like, you know, when I hear the right, for example, call Obama the anointed one, I don't necessarily have a problem with that because of the way there's a blind allegiance to him because he's a horrible peace president, with the exception of every now and then he decides to do diplomacy. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree. I don't want to speak on behalf of my generation, but I think it's safest in that most people, especially, well, I don't want to use anyone, especially young people, but everyone is set up with the two-party dichotomy.
Right.
I mean, the two parties are the same, you know, two sides of the same coin. Like, there is very little, there's few subtle differences between the two of them. They just package it in slightly different ways and with slightly different rhetoric. I mean, the Democrats are just, I really hope in my lifetime that we see a more democratic multi-party system where people have more options. Like, it doesn't make any sense that Rand Paul would run on a Republican ticket.
Totally agree. Like, totally agree.
He just could do so well if he broke off into his own thing. It doesn't make any sense that Bernie Sanders would run on the Democratic ticket.
Agreed.
It's disappointing, and it just makes me and my colleagues feel like, you know, what we call a democracy is really a facade. It's an option, you know. It's just a game that the elite play, and that we pretend we have a role in. But I could rant about that for 3 hours.
And actually add 3 for me, and we're talking all day. We get nothing done. Absolutely. Because it's interesting you mention that. You know, again, this is one of my platforms, is I'm the anti-party person. You know, Rand Paul, who actually, I don't have really say his name. My nickname for Rand Paul is Trick Liberty. I have other issues with him. But you're right. And I had the same, you know, my problem, the same thing with his father. Regardless of whether you supported him or not, you know, how well did it go that you even ran as a Republican? Because, you know, we know that they're private parties. They're private corporations. And they say, well, we have to do this because we don't have a chance to be heard any other way. But you're not being heard anyway. So what's the point? Jill Stein, of course, you know, who I know very well, again, and I know Code Pink was at her presidential state, you know, when she announced at the press club, for example, and so she's doing the way it should be done, in my opinion. You know, regardless of what the result is, she's out there. Why would she be a part of something that is, nobody seems to have the ethics to it? You know, there really aren't ethics. That's why we're having this discussion. Oh, I'm running into myself. So you know, but so anyway, getting back on track to we really didn't leave it, but getting back on track to the election is interesting. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about relative to the election is, you know, we know, for example, right now, let's say from the left is excited about Bernie Sanders. Now, I'm not convinced that anything's going to happen different than the anointed ones from either party. But putting that aside, one of the things I found curious about that whole platform is there. He hasn't announced a foreign policy strategy on his website, for example. He's staying away from the issue. Now, you and I believe know why, but from the standpoint of the progressive. But I went and asked some people who are heavily invested in supporting Bernie. And my question was, and even one of my colleagues on the board of the coffee party, and I said, so from this, without knowing what his, I'm not going to assume what his policy is, you know, just by history. I won't even say anything about that. Said, but are you telling me that the economy within the United States is what you care about and you really don't have any interest in what is going on and how we're behaving around the world? And the answer was yes, and more often than not, which blows my mind. You know, because what happens around the world is impacting what's inside our country in so many different ways. Economically, of course, like you mentioned even earlier. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, what you see.
Well, that sounds really disturbing. Yeah, I mean, the disclaimer, I'm automatically critical of any and all politicians. So
right.
Right. Why we're still involved in the war on terror is because of our relationship with Israel. And so It's the cycle of taxpayer dollars being spent, sending money to Israel, sending money to fight the terrorists that have been created by our military ventures. And Bernie Sanders needs to speak up. The majority of our budget as a country goes to this. How can you ignore that?
Right.
It's totally nuts. It's like, it's the elephant in the room. It's not even the Republican elephant. It's like a huge, ugly elephant saying, you know, talk about me. And if you want to talk about getting this country on track, you know, and at least balancing the budget, you have to talk about the military budget. You have to talk about aid in places like Israel and places like Egypt, where we shouldn't be spending any money either. We spend over $1 billion a year. And I know a lot of people would say that's chump change, but the repercussions
it does. Well, it does. You know, because I don't put aside personally in my wish for a better United States and a better world. I don't put aside the foreign policy of the United States because I'm not very satisfied with the economy. You know, it's almost for me, it's almost like the lesser of two evils approach, like we do with the election anyway. And I want, you know, I'm like, no, we have to address it all. I'm sorry, you know, and how can you be against, for example, corporate personhood, as Bernie talks about, or the plutocracy or the oligarchy, you know, or corporate welfare, and not be against the military-industrial complex? Because it's the biggest players, you know, between that and big pharma and the prison industrial complex. We've got all these big players. They all have to be dealt with. And as you point out, and we all should know, I mean, we have our military budget is bigger than the next 10 or 12 or whatever the number is today. It's at least 10. The next 10 countries combined, and 9 of them are our allies. What are we doing? It's absurd. Imagine that. Yes, we do.
It doesn't make any sense, and it takes billions of dollars to maintain those military bases, but not only are we maintaining them, we're expanding them. It just doesn't add up, and it's very harmful, not only for our economy, but for our national security, because we're making enemies around the world.
No doubt. You know, talking about the bases, I was on 4 weeks ago now, Abby Martin launched a new show, The Empire Files, and her first episode was about the world's biggest military empire, which of course is ours. And, you know, I say this, and I'll plug her, a colleague as well, I'll plug the show because I defy anybody to watch that and find one thing wrong with it factually. I sat there and I studied it's about 25 minutes long, and I studied what she put out there, and it was phenomenal. And, of course, it's not mainstream media, again, talking about these things, but I implore everybody to watch it. You know, you can find it on my website, actually. I take liberty with my coffee.com, plug. The information, though, about what we're doing from a militaristic standpoint that was in those files that we're talking about here is very important. It is the paramount importance when it comes to all things United States, without a doubt. And I know one of the things you want to talk about, that I also want to talk about, is our wonderful, fantastic, human rights loving ally, Saudi Arabia. you chuckle, Allie. You chuckle. I sometimes, you know, that. No, well, right. I mean, so obviously I'm not the only one who thinks so, right? I mean, come on. So. Yeah, well, there you go. So, and this again is another blind spot when you talk about allegiances and ideologies and party allegiance, and you know, President Obama, here's another example of an administration that we have in present who's supporting a regime that is an atrocious human rights violator. And of course, it's interesting to me, we have so much Islamophobia in this country right now with all that disinformation going on. You know, and yeah, 9/11, I get it. I lost a cousin at 9/11. I totally understand it without question. I'm a veteran. I totally understand all of that. I totally get terrorism, real terrorism, whatever that really is. But the Islamophobia in this country is insane, and yet Saudi doesn't, it just, they're like Teflon. When it comes to the discussion, when you look at it from like the fear-mongering that Fox News does, you don't hear about Saudi at all. When you talk about the discussions that you hear about in your local communities or people who, I mean, just fear-mongering people, it doesn't matter who it is, Saudi doesn't come up. What the hell is going on like that? Excuse my incivility. But what is up with that? Help me out here, Hallie.
Well, first of all, I want to make a bit of a plug for Abby Martin and his show. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but Abby Martin is one of my friends, and she's awesome. And
yes, she is.
Empire Files is going to be absolutely excellent. In terms of Saudi Arabia, we are trying to get to the bottom of this. I do think we have been disgusted and appalled by the relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. You know, we can scream about the relationship between the U.S. and Israel all we want, but there's also a very nefarious, nefarious deals going on all the time, billions and billions of dollars worth of weapons being exchanged between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia every year.
Yep.
And, you know, it needs to stop immediately. It's hard to understand why this is happening. Obviously, profit is at the, you know, top of, is paramount in many ways. But it's important to know that Saudi Arabia is actually sinking millions and millions of dollars into institutions all across the United States, which
right.
is something that we've just recently found.
Right.
Georgetown and Harvard have both accepted over, I think they both took $20 million from right. the Saudi government to construct Islamic law study centers. And I have no qualms with any kind of religious study centers, but as long as they're not whitewashing the crimes of a government, and we are yet to delve deeper into that. We want to make connections with those schools to learn more about
right.
the influence of Saudi money on the administration. We've even heard that Saudi Arabia invests money into textbook manufacturers who make books for kindergartner through 12th grade,
right.
Which is really interesting and weird, and we're going to look into that more. But we also see that over the years, Saudi Arabia has given money to places like the Carter Foundation,
right.
Jimmy Carter's group, and millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
So that's a little fishy, and we are going to be following the money in more research on where else money has gone from the Saudi government, what that money has done, you know, how it's impacted those places, and then how we can expose it. But, you know, we are particularly offended by Saudi Arabia for lots of reasons. I mean, you mentioned 9/11, and a lot of people don't even bring up that the 9/11, most of the 9/11 hijackers were from Saudi
First
Arabia.
From Saudi Arabia, yes. That's right.
Like it's so, but I'm sorry, we're attacking, you know, we've gone into Afghanistan and Iraq since, which makes no sense at all.
Right. Right.
But in addition to that, you know, Saudi Arabia right now, it imprisons people and beheads people who simply criticize the government there.
Right.
And I think there have been 80 beheadings in 2015 alone, and these are public events, and in some instances, the people are crucified.
Right.
They have been beheaded. And there's a 17-year-old who's now 21, but when he was 17, he was arrested for participating in a demonstration.
Right.
And he's been sentenced to beheading and crucifixion.
Right.
His last name is Al Nasir.
Right.
And Nassim, NASM.
Right.
And we're going to be launching an aggressive campaign to raise awareness about him starting on Monday. And right now, I mean, I can list the things Saudi Arabia is doing that are egregious for days, but I just want to highlight the fact that bloggers, like, it says, like, you would be lashed in public 1,000 times.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And women don't have the right to drive. They can be stoned to death if they're caught committing adultery. But I haven't even mentioned, and I could talk for an hour about the Saudi bombing campaign of Yemen.
Yes.
Which has killed thousands of people. I mean, it's just outrageous how indiscriminately Saudi Arabia has bombed the country of Yemen. And our support for that bombing campaign is utterly appalling. I mean, it is just absolutely a massacre of horrific proportions. And if your listeners haven't, you know, caught up on what's going on there with our weapons, it's really imperative that they do, because what this is doing to the mindset of young people in the Middle East, in Yemen and beyond, is just increasing anti-American sentiment, because they
right.
know that Saudi Arabia is getting these bombs from the United States.
Yeah, not only the bombs, but they're also being supported by them from the standpoint of diplomacy and policy. You know,
they're getting intelligence.
Yep.
From the United States, we're sharing we've got drones flying over Yemen, and we're relaying that information directly to Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
It really is,
and then you throw in the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, you know, and connection to the mainstream media. You know, that one of the things that I point out to people when discussing mainstream media is Amber Lyon's story when she was covering Bahrain. And, you know, here is an Emmy Award, with three-time Emmy Award-winning journalist for CNN International, who is trying to expose the human rights violations of Bahrain, and she gets told she can't do that, and her information gets altered, and she blows the whistle on him and leaves, of course, because she can't stand it. Finds out that Bahrain actually pays CNN for positive spin on the news reports. People, pay attention to what I'm saying here. It's like, wake up.
And, you know, there was an uprising in Bahrain, I think it was 2011.
Right. Right.
What happened is that the people of Bahrain peacefully gathered in Pearl Square. They did their grievances. They camped out. And the Bahraini government had Saudi tanks and, police officers and even the military roll in and absolutely quash the peaceful protest.
Yeah.
The Bahraini government outsources police jobs to Saudis and Pakistanis and people from countries around them. But the Saudis played a huge role in crushing that peaceful uprising. Nadia saw it firsthand, and she saw the tear gas that was used against peaceful protesters, which was made in the
United States, right.
And it's the same tear gas that Israel uses against Palestinians, and it's the same tear gas that police use against protesters in Ferguson and in Baltimore.
That is correct. And that was actually covered. That was covered pretty heavy by mainstream media and alternative media and some mainstream media, absolutely. You know, I can tell you, and if you don't know this, I don't know if you know this or not, we don't talk about this, but the alternative media outlets that I write for, the Fifth Column News particularly and Mint Press News particularly, are really covering these regions heavily with boots on the ground, not just doing regurgitated stuff. We actually have relationships with journalists that are in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Asia, who are first giving first-hand accounts with it, and let you know that not everybody is blind to what's happening. Fortunately, you know, alternative media is definitely the better way to go. But you're right. I mean, if we were over there, there are people in jail all over the place who are journalists, bloggers, protesters, you know, who haven't done anything other than to do what we're talking about, dissent. And yet the governments that are doing that are being supported by foreign policy and have been for decades. This isn't something new. This is like, isn't like President Obama is like, well, I think I'll do this and be the first one. This is a continuation of that policy for decades, you know, where you almost want to say, well, the president doesn't even run this. This is being run from inside. You know, Jeremy Scahill made a comment when I was at a conference that he did that I thought was very interesting in how when President Obama was running for, when was made the ticket for the Democratic ticket in 2008, when he was running, that everything changed for him when he had his first NSA briefing, if you pay attention to it. Now, it's hard to remember exactly live going into it, but I see what he's talking about because that's what happens. They have these NSA briefings, and it's like, okay, well, here's what's going on in the military, and this is what we're going to do, and I don't care what you were thinking, this is what we're doing. And it makes you wonder if that's what's happening, because why wouldn't things change? They're just consistently the same. Do you see that?
Yeah, and, you know, I can always pick from how long I've been politically involved, but it seems very much now like, you know, our foreign policy is run by these shadow institutions like the CIA, the NSA, who are supposedly civilian, institutions, but
right.
Are completely militarized. The CIA has killer drones that not only has it used against people of other countries, but has actually used to kill American citizens.
Right.
So I can't speak for the role of the CIA in foreign policy, you know, over the last few decades from my personal experience, but now it just seems like it doesn't matter who you are, if you're Obama or Dick Cheney, but I imagine you know that Cheney didn't have any problem with the CIA and probably personally harmed a lot of its rise as a paramilitary institution. But yeah, it's pretty horrible. There's no transparency and there's no accountability, and you put yourself in danger when you speak out like Jeremy Scahill, because you become an enemy of the state
right.
Instead of recognized for some of his trying to reform it.
Well, I can tell you, Dick Cheney, I scream at the television sometimes or whatever I happen to be watching. And, of course, when Dick Cheney was named to be on the ticket for Bush, I screamed loud because Dick has been around a while. You know, so is Donald Rumsfeld. He's been around for a while. I screamed at President Obama when he said that he was going to leave Robert Gates as Secretary of Defense, because I already screamed when he was made Secretary of Defense, because he's, as far as I'm concerned, Gates is a criminal. Had been, you know, that if people study some of these leaders and the things that they were involved with, I mean, you know, I tell everybody I became an activist because of Saint Reagan. I have nicknames, if you haven't noticed, and for a lot of people, you know, and I became an activist because of Saint Reagan. And all of these people were involved in that administration when the Iran-Contra thing happened. All of these people were involved with the Arms for Hostages stuff with Iran. And we just let them pass and come back. You know, and somebody stop. And then yet, you know, then like you mentioned, the Clinton Foundation. Well, Slick Willie is responsible for the longest bombing campaign in the history of the world. But it's Slick Willie, you know. Oh, it is. It's insane, and it is. And of course, it isn't. It happens, I think, in foreign policy more than anything else, because it's not happening in our country. We're not seeing the damage that's happening, like people are living through. I mean, Saint Reagan had these people in the White House that he called founding fathers, and they created the Taliban. And it's just, it's amazing that we just. Like, come on, everybody, it's there.
I think it's important to call out now that the policies of George Bush and his administration paved the way and created the vacuum that allowed ISIS to...
Oh, absolutely.
And then that was something that people aren't talking about now, but it's really, really, really important to realize. And when Obama is pursuing similar... policies and tactics to deal with ISIS, like Bush did when it came to Al Qaeda. It's frightening to think about what could come next. If you keep trying to bomb away extremism and it keeps coming back uglier and uglier, it's
Yeah, well, no, well, that's why we do what we do. We have no choice. As I tell everybody, I'd rather be on the lake, which is only a mile from my front door, you know, so I really, but I don't get to go out there a lot because they're not letting me. It's amazing. Not letting you either. I mean, I'm sure there's other things you'd rather be doing if the world would just correct itself. And the United States, where we live, would correct itself, because we are as powerful as people say we are, and we could really be that beacon if we put human rights first and put fairness and equality first as our foreign policy, and peace, of course, as our foreign policy. Peace would be a great foreign policy. Don't you agree? I'm sure you'd agree, because that's what you do. You're a woman of peace.
I do agree.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, in foreign
policy,
but also in our own country, if we were actually...
Oh, yes. It would, you know, corporate personhood is a joke. The what's going on with our we had 100 million people not vote, over 100 million people not eligible voters,
yeah,
not vote in the last midterm. Yeah, it is. Everybody. That's right. Yeah, you know, absolutely, and I'm really glad to hear about how expansive that coalition that you're involved with. So we have about 10 minutes, and we haven't covered something that's really important that you told me about last night I wasn't aware of. As I told you, I need to be following you guys more closely, apparently, because I'm missing things. And you have a couple of trips coming up that you have to tell everybody about, particularly the next one.
Sure. So we have a deadline right around the corner, October 2nd, for a trip to Palestine that we're taking. We're bringing 30 people to participate in the olive harvest happening in the West Bank. We're partnering up with the Canaan Fair Trade Association. They harvest olives, and then every year there's a giant fair trade festival at the end of the week, and delegates will be picking olives, attending the festival, staying with farmers. We're going to meet with cooperatives and women's groups while we're there. We're going to meet with the Stop the Wall campaign to learn about Palestinian resistance to the Israeli occupation. And overall, just get a really good sense of Palestinian culture, identity, resistance, and, you know, protest. It's going to be a really wonderful trip, especially if someone wants to visit Palestine and has never been there before, just kind of wants an introduction, wants to get to know some Palestinian people really well. It's going to be a beautiful trip. It's November 1st through 8th, and it's on our website. All the information is there, but just in case you want more information, you can email me at Allie, A-L-L-I, at clickpink.org. And then we are also taking a trip to Guantanamo in November, and unfortunately that trip is closed off. We've hit the maximum amount of people we can take, but I will be thrilled to tell you about it when I get back. We're going to an international conference about foreign military bases, and obviously the U.S. has more military bases than any other country in the world, so a lot of it will be focused on that. But we're taking two more delegations to Cuba in February and in May, and there's lots of spots open. We will be going to Havana for the week with excursions to other parts of the island and meeting with lots of different political groups and learning about the revolution and what worked and what didn't work in Cuban society and resisting American imperialism. I've done the trip before. It's really fun and really inspiring, and I learned a lot that I brought back here. So I would love for anyone to join us. Everything is on at clickpink.org. We have an issue section, and then you just go to travel with clickpink, and all of our trips are listed there. And Bobby's going to be coming to Palestine.
I haven't worked that out yet, but I want to go. So that's half the battle, that's for sure. And now that you've said it out loud, perhaps I better get on it today, because it's as you were talking about it, and this is what I thought about last night when you mentioned these to me. You know, if you really forget the fact that I'm on the side of peace and the side of stopping the occupation, but when you talk about people who don't understand the issue, or perhaps want peace but believe that what Israel is doing correct in advancement of peace, because that is a legitimate debate position as well, besides the blind allegiance, this is an opportunity for you to go and see for yourself what's going on, what how people live, get to know people, not governments, people, and what's happening to people. So anybody that, you know, has the time and has the activist ambition particularly, I would recommend that you do something like this. No matter, I mean, you mentioned to me last time you were on the show some months ago that you guys had gone to North Korea. That would have been a really fun one. That I couldn't have lined up fast enough for that. You know, for example, it things like that are really important, everybody. And so you and the other thing is, you know, talking about Code Pink as an organization and Ally McCracken as a person. Remember when you are trying to figure out how you feel about what her and this organization is doing, that they've actually been there, that they've seen it, they've lived it. This isn't somebody who's sitting there being told how to think, like so many of us are in by the mainstream media, by our government. These are people who are actually taking the time to go look, to find, to research, to travel, to put the dots together, as we talked about earlier. You know, so consider that when you talk about what Code Pink stands about. That is how I see it anyway, as far as the part of the problem, that people aren't considering the fact that you guys are actually boots on the ground, and other activists are boots on the ground. So you got about 4 minutes, Ally, because I know you got to go. It isn't a time I'm putting on you. You put it on you. So, and I know you got the rest of the day with the conference.
A few last thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you are, absolutely. I saw the hula hoop pictures. I saw the hula hoop pictures, and they were fun.
But I appreciate you pointing that out. There is nothing like going to a place and seeing it for yourself. Right. There's nothing like connecting with people on the ground. I've been really fortunate in my life to travel to places like Pakistan and Syria and Palestine and meet with people and broaden my perspective to learn about how the United States can improve its image and its actions around the world. And, you know, I feel like I've done a lot of, you know, America bashing in the last hour, but I just want to strongly affirm that it's because I love my country.
Right.
It's because I am so grateful to live in a country where I can speak out in opposition to my government's actions, that I can protest freely in almost any way I want. Granted, that's being stifled more recently than not in bizarre ways, but I am grateful to live here, and I am doing this, and the work we do from Code Pink is because we want to improve the United States and because we love it, because it's our home.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want your listeners to say, oh, you know, she's a communist who hates the United States.
Right.
I said it before, I'll say it again. I think defense is one of the highest forms of patriotism, and that's what the Founding Fathers said, too.
That's right.
And so it's important for us to build a better world that we want to live in, not by being critical.
No, and that's great, because you mentioned that, and I feel the same way. I love my country, without a doubt. I mean, why else would I be trying, and you would be trying, to make it better? Because that's really what we're trying to do, is make it better. We're not trying to make it unsafe by wanting peace. We've talked about defense, which is, I meant to mention, that is constitutional, by the way. Remember that paper? So the it is important what you said, without a doubt, because, again, I know you've heard that, oh, you're anti-American. Yeah, whatever. I am not anti-American. Never have been, never will be. I serve my country, for example, which, by the way, means when I signed that contract at 18 years old, that here, you have my life. Go do with it what you will, by the way. So the anti-American thing doesn't work, and because I want, like Ally does, and fully support what she just said, we want our country to be better. We want our country to be beacon that they like to say we are, mainstream media and other people, the beacon of freedom in the world, because we should be, without a doubt, without a doubt. Ally, I appreciate you coming on, as always, and you know I fully support what you and Code Pink does, and I will be in touch about Palestine, and I do hope I can go. I really want to go. I wasn't kidding when I said that last night. And now I don't know what to do because you announced it on my radio show. So I have to get on it. I will be in touch with you. And have a great day, rest of the conference. And everybody, anybody in Atlanta that wants to run down to the Holiday Inn to see the rest of this conference, please do. And I look forward to talking to you real soon. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Bobby. I look forward to talking to you soon.
On the show. And, you know, I have to emphasize, you know, why do we have pushback on coping from anybody in our society that likes to have peace? And everybody in our society should want to have peace. I mean, that's what they stand for. That's certainly what I stand for. You know, I believe foreign policy is as important an issue as there is in our society. So I really appreciate Ali coming on, as I said, and want to thank everybody for listening. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties we've had. Continue to working on that. I don't know why the audio was as difficult as it was, but hopefully I can fix it for the archive. Anyway, remember, next weekend is the International CannaPro Expo in Orlando, as I talked about earlier on the show. And remember, we are here 7 days a week, Coffee Party Radio. I'm on every Sunday at 10 a.m. I take liberty with my coffee. Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, the Tim Danahay Show. Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America, Issa Hodge, Common Cal. Wednesday night, 3 Wednesday nights every month, we have Living Room Conversation with your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux. And the 4th Wednesday, we have a coffee party event show. Thursday, we have lunch with Loudon, 12 Pacific and 3 Eastern Time. Every Thursday, Janine Loudon and the wonderful Lunch with Loudon show. Friday, A Cup of Joe. Friday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And on Saturday, the Great Roberto Willie's, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Central, every Saturday, Politics Done Right. Don't forget to check in at a coffee party, www.coffeepartyusa.com. Also, check out my website when you get a chance, itakelibertywithmycoffee.com. I appreciate everybody being here, and I will talk to you all next Sunday. Let me know if you have any issues you'd like me to raise. Drop me a line at Bobby@CoffeePartyUSA.com or BobbyRodrigo@ITakeLibertyWithMyCoffee.com. Everybody have a fantastic week. It is going to be October when I come to you live next week. Take care.